Now, our next speaker is very well known to us, or any of us who were was watching RTE in the 80s and the 90s and the early days. She was the first female to be given her own television chat show, which was quite campaigning and quite groundbreaking in its day. And her talk today has the theme of finding your mojo again, I think, loosely described. The actual official title of it is Personal Wealth Through Personal Motivation. Will you welcome, please, Bibi Baskin.
Thank you. Now I must get this little gadget first. It's almost vital, ladies and gentlemen. And I also have to start with an admission. You see, when I learned that our talk today is about your future wealth, I knew I had to tell you that I actually don't have loads of money. And in fact, it was true. Come and see how I live, or don't. But a prediction was made for me in that regard 15 years ago. Because 15 years ago, I went on a three-week holiday to India. Oh, I did all the local touristy things, you know, take the boat down the river, look at the local traditional dance, eat innumerable delicious curries. And then I did something else. I went to a Vedic astrologer. Now, for those of you not familiar with India, the Vedas, roughly speaking, are the Bible, the Hindu Bible, you could say. And Hindus take it very seriously, and they take their astrologers very seriously, too. So if, for example, you were a Hindu in India and you wanted to get married, you would consult your astrologer. And if he said, no, that's not for you, the marriage is off. That's not why I went to an astrologer, believe you me. I went out of, I suppose I say with respect, out of idle curiosity. And that gentleman told me two things that I'll never forget. First of all, he said, in 2 years' time, you will change your career. I said, no. You see, I'd been a broadcaster, I'd given it up, and I fancied writing the book, as we all do, and as few of us ever finish. So I said, yeah, I'm a broadcaster turned writer. And he said, no, madam, in 2 years' time, you will change your career. In 2 years' time, I became a hotelier. He was spot on. The other thing that I remember he told me, which is of more relevance to our talk this morning, he said to me, you'll never be rich, but you'll always have enough money to do. You'll never be rich, but you'll always have enough money to do. It's 15 years later, spot on. Absolutely spot on. But all of these meanderings got me thinking about how we actually define wealth. And, you know, if we go back, say, to the early days of my life, I grew up in a small two-streeted village in Ireland, creatively named the Front Street and the Back Street. Thank you, creative people here today as well. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of money floating around in those days. And you got your wealth through status. So that status came from your profession. So there was a school teacher, there was the garda or policeman, there was the bank manager, and of course the doctor. And that was where status came into it, and therefore wealth. But now if we spool forward quickly, we come to the days of the Celtic Tiger in latter times. A lot of money floating around, I believe. I wasn't part of it. A lot of Western economies also had this experience. And then, of course, the inevitable downside came afterwards. But now we have good news. I'm told that the Irish economy and other Western economies are actually shooting green, I think it's called green shoots, sprouting green shoots, we can say. So our economy is coming up. And that makes me want to ask you a couple of questions. What are you going to do with that new resurgence in our economy to actually shape your future wealth? Well, I have a few ideas, but I'm afraid I do have to start with the negative. You see, recently I moved back to Ireland, and I saw one worrying trend. People who are fortunate enough to have jobs, mostly 40s, 50s I was looking at, mostly self-employed, they are working so hard that I actually question their future health. You know, this is how the routine goes. Get up in the morning, hop onto the exercise bike there in the bedroom, or maybe go to the gym, back for a bit of breakfast, hardly eaten. Big commute then into the office, work hard in the office all morning. Lunchtime, you know, that chilled sandwich that you get from the petrol station on the corner, no nutrition. Work hard again in the afternoon. Then you go to an event, because you want to do networking and you want to grow your business. Maybe even you'll go to a second event that evening to grow your business more. Then you go home, microwavable food into the microwave, no nutrition, go to bed, laptop with you because you must catch up on social media. Where is the wealth in that? Where is the health in that? So do you know what I did? I did a little ad hoc survey with a couple of friends, old and new. So I asked one new friend, I said, what's it all for, all this hard work? And he said, well, it's for my children. And I said, well, that's very good. But I said, how old are your children? And he said, 38 and 36. I give up. So I asked an old friend, and I said, what's it all for? Because I've written a blog about it. And he said to me, well, he said, I love my job. Why shouldn't I do loads of it? I love it. And I said, yeah, I love whipped cream. But if I ate a carton of that every day, I'd be having a very intimate date with a cardiologist. So you see, I don't think it's really that wise. But let's go back in time. Because as T.S. Eliot said, times past are always in times present. So the first real job I had in Ireland was that of a TV presenter. And as Orla said, you know, I got a chat show of my own. I was the first woman in Ireland to do that. Not bad for a gal who came from a two-streeter village, I thought. But my enemy is boredom. And I love change. So after 8 years doing that job, I said, no, I'm bored. I'm going to quit. So I did. And I went to London. And I worked with all the big TV companies there, ITV, BBC, Channel 5, added in radio as well. And, oh, lovely at the time. 5 years later, my old enemy, boredom, tapped me on the shoulder. I quit. And I went to India. So, I liked very much what I saw in India, and I thought, I can write the book here. So, I decided to rent a small house. I found my feet locally. And then I thought, no, I must put some kind of formal structure into my life. No job to go to, no office, no colleagues. Friendship takes time to build. So I bought me a house. It was an old heritage house, a landmark really in its area. It was in a certain state, which I assure you by showing you a picture of the main hall in my house. There already. What do you think? Come on. You can't say it out loud. You're being videoed. Pretty dilapidated, huh? But I believe, and you may call me sexist for this, but I think that in every one of us, females, there's a girl who wants to play house. And I'd never played house. I'd always had people to create nice homes for me. So I decided I'd play house. I did the whole interior design myself. And this room came to this. How have we got it? Oh, what do you think? Not bad. I was such a chancer. I did it all myself. And then there was a patch of ground out the back, and I thought, what'll I do with that? Well, years ago, I had, and still have actually, a fear of drowning in a swimming pool. And that really gets in the way when you go on holiday. You know, all the pals are in the pool, lapping around. I'm sitting like an idiot on the edge, pretending to read a book. So when I was 38, I thought I'll go and I'll change all that. I'll have lessons. Now, remember, I'm on the telly at that stage. So I join a ladies' group. I suppose they'd seen me the night before on the telly, all dolled up, professionally groomed, all the rest of it. Now I'm in the pool. I'm bulging out of my swimsuit. No, I have no picture of that. I am not that much of a fool. Hair tied back. And one of the ladies says to me, and I'm full of fear, remember. I think I'm going to drown when I get into this water that has no bottom until you go really down. She says to me, she says, you don't look at all like you do on the telly. I flew out of the place. And I then decided I'm not going back there. So I went for private lessons, 5 o'clock in the morning, no escape, television show at night, into the private pool in the morning where I was sure I was going to die, and I persisted. So, we spool forward now to India, this rough bit of land out the back. I thought, I'm going to have me a swimming pool, because I knew I couldn't afford one in Ireland, neither then, nor since, nor in the future. So, let's have a go at this one. The local boys came in to help. Look at them, all those Indians digging this hole out the back for me. Now, I did put in a plastic lighter because I couldn't afford the real thing. But that rough area became this. Now, during that whole setup, I thought, writing a book, it's a bit solitary, I'm single, I'll take in some backpackers at the weekend, keep me company. So to cut a long Indian story short, I had to get various licenses to do that. And therefore, I had to deal with government officials who would come and inspect my place. And they decided that I was, in fact, the owner of a heritage hotel in India because the refurbishment had been done with good taste and honesty. I was suddenly a hotelier. You see, that astrologer was right. But I wasn't just a hotelier. I was a happy, happy hotelier for 15 years. And this is another point that I want to get across to you. If you're not happy in your job today, change it. If you're not happy in your house or apartment today, change it. If you're not happy in your time today, change it. If you're not happy in your relationship today, don't change it, because I don't want that on my conscience. The thing that happens is, you know, you could see obstacles. You could say, I've got a mortgage to pay. I've got young kids in school. How can I change anything? Oh, you can, ladies and gentlemen. Once you make the decision to change, it's amazing how those other obstacles that are very important parts of your life, they just disappear. Another thing, though, is that you must not be fearful of change. Because, you know, fear is a terrible thing. It's like it's got invisible hands that come up and throttle you. And that's not good. When I started that hotel, which incidentally was written up in the Sunday Times of London as one of the 10 best sleeps in India, I was never fearful of failure. Because I think if we fail, it just means we've made the wrong decision at that time. Or maybe we're in the wrong place. But if you bring fear to that, then when you make the next change, that fear will come back. So what about it? And if you're going to make change, don't delay. Life is short. And another thing. If you're saying to yourself, I'll do it later, like a lot of people have said to me since I've come back to Ireland recently, I'd love to go to India. It's on my bucket list. What? I say bucket list. I believe there's an arrogance in thinking if you've got a bucket list. It means you know when you're going to die. Do you? That's a great rhetorical question. Of course not, of course not. So I also wrote a blog that I called Bin the Bucket List. So I'd hope you do that as well. But the real big life lesson that I learned of all of these factors, it happened in India, of course, my great teacher. And it was Christmas time, and the hotel was supposed to open, but I was nervous. By Indian law, I had to have an Indian business partner, Mr. Fleming, much younger than I was. So he said, it's a high tourist season now, we've got to open this place. So I said, all right, we'll do it. We opened. Not one guest came. Not even one. He was distraught. I was relieved. He went off to see his mother, as you do. And then I discovered that hoteliers all over the world are quite naughty. They're naughty in that they overbook. So let's say your hotel is 20 rooms. These naughty hoteliers will book actually 25 rooms, so that if 5 people don't show up, they still get a full hotel. Greedy, I would say, and unethical. But you see, we're empty, and now the word spreads, there's a new hotel on the block. And guess what happened? We got the overflow, and suddenly we were full. Well, I worked morning, noon, and night. I tried to refine the menu, I checked the laundry service, I would of course look at my beloved pool, looked after the guests, tried to retrain the staff, and I got exhausted. I was so tired, so worn out, I got this pain down my arm, and I knew I had to take some action. So Mr. Fleming came back, and he said, you know, in the Indian way, we'd say in Ireland, how's it going? I said, I have to do something. And for the first time in my life, I found myself saying, I have to go to either a hospital or a hotel for a couple of days because I can't go on. And, you know, we were greenhorns when we opened up. We hadn't the systems entirely in place, But nevertheless, I knew I had pushed myself to that limit, that I could not go beyond it. And this young Indian man, young in years indeed, but with ancient wisdom from India, he turned to me and he said, "Which is more important to you, your job or your life?" And ladies and gentlemen, that's the question that I'd like you to take home today from my talk. Which is more important to you, your job or your life? Namaste.